I just come off a 4-week blackout. But to him I was a bargain. So much so that he lit up like a Christmas tree. And I was hooked before he ever opened his mouth again. And when he did, this is what he said. Why, take off your hat and coat, you're in the right place. And he took me in and rocked me to sleep. This is AA. Now, they told me a few things the first night. They told me that if I was an alcoholic, it was the first drink that was given me. Said they one drink is too many and 1,000 aren't enough. Now, I've been drinking for 25 years and nobody had ever told me that. And I had never told myself that. Because, you see, through all of my bad drinking, I was periodic. And periodics don't get drunk in a hurry. Periodics taper on. They never taper off. We have a regular routine, and if you'll bear with me a minute, I'm going to tell you, because it's so funny, it kills me. We come off a drunk, you know, bad drunk. And we start immediately getting ourselves back in physical shape. We're talking about periodics. And we eat well, and we sleep well, and we drink a lot of milk, and we eat vitamins with the buckets. We get well enough, we take a few exercises. And as soon as we get in the pinky condition physically, then we turn to the mental part of the deal. We analyze our last drunk. And we see where we made our mistakes. And we decide not to do it that way anymore. And when we get everything lined out just the way it ought to be, we start sampling. And we sample our way right on back to bed. So it had never occurred to a periodic. There was the first drinker who was killing us. But I thought about it for a little while. And I could see it was only a question of time from that first slug until I was flat on my back in bed drinking clubbing. So I bought the first one. The second one, they said, today is the day we don't drink. Now, that's a sneaky way to get you to come back, isn't it? Today is the day we don't drink. If they had told me I had to be sober 27 years, I'd have dropped dead. 27 days, no. Maybe 27 hours, I don't know. But they didn't do it. They said, today's the day we don't drink. Now, if a day is too long, how about an hour? Put your life on the basis of how long you can live without a drink. Live that long and don't drink and start over and do it again. But don't take a drink today. We have a saying amongst us, by the yard it's hard. By the inch, it's a cinch. One day at a time. Now, they told me, regardless of how long you live in Alcoholics Anonymous, never stretch that time more than 24 hours. And I bought that one, and I've lived by it for almost 27 years. It may be the second greatest lesson I've ever learned in my entire lifetime. If I had one message that I'd like to give you, above all else, it would be this. Leave every yesterday and every tomorrow in this room when you go home. Leave every one of them right here. 99% of our troubles are yesterday's burdens and tomorrow's fears. And the combined intelligence of the human race can't change one thought or act of yesterday. And tomorrow isn't even ours. It's God's. We might not even be here tomorrow. So it leaves only today. I'm going to tell you a little story about that. Fresno, a number of years ago, after the meeting, we had another meeting. And we were at the kid's place. He was originally from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And he was much younger than I. And he had a beautiful wife and some little kids. About 2 o'clock in the morning, we were out in the kitchen. And he said to me, Chuck, he says, every so often I have to get drunk. And I says, that's interesting. Tell me about it. And he says, I get to thinking about what I did to my wife and my kids, and I can't stand it. I get to hurting so bad I have to get drunk. I says, don't blame you. I don't blame you. If I got to thinking about what I've done to my wife and my kids, I'd be drunk before we get to Bakersfield. That was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I said to the guy, you think there wouldn't be a liquor store open at this time of night, don't you? There would be when I ran this car of mine through the front of one of them. And that's what I'd have to do if I got to thinking what I did to my wife and my kids. I'd never think of it. Because there's nothing I can do about it. The thing I can do is to try today to add a little something to their lives. And that's the best I can do. Leave all your yesterdays and all your tomorrows in this room when you leave. The next thing they told me is stay close to us. Get into as many meetings as you can, said they. There is more wisdom, said they, in this room tonight than in any other room on the face of the earth, covering your problem and its answer. Except another room just like this, where members of Alcoholics Anonymous are meeting. Stay close to us. Get into as many meetings as you can. And I've done that. I have averaged near 5 and 4 meetings a week for 27 years. And I've never attended one too many. I've been here for a little over 24 hours. I believe this is the third or fourth. Fourth! This is the fourth meeting I've been to since I got here. And I've never attended one too many. How do I know? Because I never had it so good. I never had it so good. I'm not about to change a winning formula. Now, there's a friend of mine not too long ago said to me, he's the guy that came in the same time I did, and he said to me, Chuck, I've quit working with wet drunks. I've done my stint. It's time these younger people were taking over. And he says, I'm tired of getting puked on. How about you, he said. And I said, I'm not ready to quit yet. I sort of like to work with wet drunks. And besides, I'd a hell of a lot rather be the pukee than the pukeor. And just for another thing, because I'm looking at some youngsters. I work much with youngsters. We have lots of young ones in our country. I sat with a guy the other day in a meeting. He was 12 years old, and he was in his 90th day without a drink. I go to many meetings, 100, 150. And the average age would be 30 or less. So we're getting lots of youngsters, and every once in a while one of them gives me the gig. He says, what do you know about how I feel? You haven't had a drink since before I was born. You couldn't possibly know how I feel. And I said, maybe I do. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can only get as old as your last session with a wet drunk. That's as old as you can get. You spend an evening with a wet drunk, and everything about this thing goes through you, and you share it with him. There's no way that you can forget. One of the great reasons for being active in this program. The next thing they told me was why I couldn't drink like other people. Now, this is all my first meeting. And this is a wonderful thing to know. This is one of the things that just pretty nearly did me in. Because here was I, great, big, good-looking ox. 6'1" when I stand up straight. About 90% brain and 10% brawn. And people were always saying to me, "Chuck, you can't drink. You got to quit." And in 99 cases out of 100, it was obvious to me that they were my inferiors. And I'd look at the pipsqueak and I'd say to myself, "Why in the hell can't I drink? He does, and he ain't got it." And my answer to me was, "You can, and you got to prove it." And I'm still trying to prove it 10 years after I lost the battle. And nobody ever told me why I couldn't drink like other people. Everybody had talked to me about willpower, backbone, standing up and being a man. Every doctor and psychiatrist and priest and preacher that I went to. They didn't know the nature of my problem, they couldn't tell me. And I didn't know it, and I couldn't help myself. So I had to die and come here. And you guys told me right off the bat why I can't drink like other people. I'm different, physically and mentally. The reason I can't drink like the non-alcoholic is that I am an alcoholic. What is an alcoholic? An alcoholic is a person who suffers with the disease of alcoholism. I had never heard that expression in my life until I got to my first meeting. I have remained, however, to find that informed medical opinion classify alcoholism now as the second cause of death in our country. The second highest cause of death. Some of these days when they start calling alcoholic deaths what they are, we'll see the true picture. It's first and probably has been first for many years as a cause of death. But already they give us number two. It was in the first four for many years, but now they call it number two. It's number two also as cause for permanent insanity. And medically speaking, it's incurable, and that's what I got. This is what you told me the first night I was here. You also told me the definition given to us by a doctor. A doctor who had said, treated 40,000 alcoholics during his practicing lifetime. Our beloved Dr. Silkworth. He said this was a disease of a twofold nature, an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. An allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. Now, nobody knows why I can't drink successfully, physically. They've been researching this thing for years, and nobody knows. So we don't spend any time on the physical difference between me and the non-alcoholic. But there are a couple of things about the physical part of the disease that I must forever keep uppermost in my mind. Number one, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. There isn't a case in medical history where anybody like me ever returned to successful drinking. You've heard or read a little bit about the folks out in our country that are presently making successful drinkers out of drunks. We don't believe it any more than you do. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Secondly, the physical side of the disease gets worse with the passage of time, even during long extended periods of total abstinence. This is a little rough for us to get through our heads. We get a little distance between us and the bottle and we think we're home free. You know? We're building up some good drinking time. I'm actually 27 years worse off so far as successful drinking is concerned than it was when I got here. And I know it, and I don't have to take a drink to prove it. Because I have been active in for my whole time. And when you're active in, you're all you got to do is keep your eyes open. Your friends are forever taking that drink for you. And you see what it does, and you watch a lot of them die. And you don't want to watch them die because you've learned to love them. But you have to watch them die just the same. It's a rough lesson, but it's very effective. I know that the physical part of the disease gets worse with the passage of time, even during long extended periods of total absence. And lastly, there's no cure for the body. We accept that part of it and then turn to the other half of the disease, and that's what our program is all about. The other half of the disease, the obsessions of the mind that cause us to drink. Now, if we be alcoholic and we want to get rid of the bottle, we have to be rid of its cause, the obsessions of the mind. And that's what our program is all about. Out our way, the American Medical Association has been saying, alcoholism is a disease, it has symptoms, it is treatable but not curable. And the only way an alcoholic can live successfully is not to take the next slug. But they cannot tell us how not to take the next slug. They can just tell us not to take it. But our program gives us a formula that makes it unnecessary for us to take the next drink. And all you and I have to do is to fulfill the conditions of the formula. And the formula is very, very simple. We complicate it, but there's nothing complicated about it. After the second condition that we were talking about, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then it says you are ready to take certain steps. And then it says here are the steps we took. Here are the steps we took. TOOK took. Now you and I, being alcoholic, know that there's no sense in that little old lie. There's not a big word in it. One word with five letters. And we don't care for little old lines like that. They've got to have big words in them. They ought to have a psychedelic or two in there and traumatic. You know, that's a good word. I don't know what either one of them means. But they're good words. We like big words. And it says, here are the steps we took. So it don't mean anything but life. It's all it means, life, if you're an alcoholic. Here are the steps we took. We're sober. And the first one we looked at, a twofold mission, admission of defeat. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and our lives had become unmanageable. And there's no place in the book that says after 10 years or 15 years or 27 years, we're going to be able to manage our lives. I have looked, and it's not there. And there's nothing in my experience that says after any length of time, I'm going to be able to run my life. I want to share this little thing with you. I was in a meeting the other night in Hollywood. 150 maybe young people. And half of it was yak-yak and the other half was questions. And the first question that was asked was, Chuck, when do you think it is a good time to take step 4? And I said, you can withdraw that if you want to. Because I have a very silly answer. I think the best time in the world to take step 4 is when you've taken steps 1, 2, and 3. That's the very best time in the world to take it. And the next thing was a statement. There was a little old girl in the audience. Stenographer, I guess, or secretary of some kind, about 28 years old. And she said, Chuck, this is the most devastating evening that I've ever spent. He says, here you are, a quarter of a century, without a drink or pill. And you get up there and say you can't run your life. You can't run your wife. You can't run your business. You can't run nothing. And that's why I'm here. To try to find out how to run my life again. There's nothing in that book that tells us we're ever going to be able to run our lives. But thank God we don't have to. And we're going to get to that in a minute. Step number two is a little worse than step number one. Because step two says, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now there's an implication here. There's no sense in restoring a sane person to sanity. If we need to be restored to sanity, we're nuts. So the first step, we lost the battle of life, and the second step, we're nuts. Pretty fast going for an alky, isn't it? Third one's worse than both of them. Third one says we got to turn over the keys. Now again, this just kills me. You know, the only way anybody ever got my keys was to whistle fast out. That's one thing I would not give up, was my keys. I could come out of a pub at 3 o'clock in the morning with my wife or yours. And we'd start over at the parking lot and she'd say, honey, give me the keys, I'll drive. And you'd say, whose car? Whose car are you going to drive? This is my car. If you're going with me, get in. You might be there at daylight. You ain't gone no place, but you still got the keys. Step three says you got to get a new driver. We made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. What a switch. What a switch. This is absolutely contrary to the way you and I have thought and acted all our lives. It's just exactly like I'd walked straight north for 43 years. Made a 180-degree turn and walked south for 27. The change is that drastic. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Now, if we do that, there is no further room for self-concern. Do you ever think of that? There's no further room for self-concern. Self-concern is just like saying, look, Dad, I don't believe you're quite as familiar with this situation as I am. I gotta get some outside help or some, you know. Self-concern, no place. If I'd ask this audience how many of you believe in God, very likely most of you would hold up your hand. If I'd say how many of you trust God, I might get a different answer. Because self-concern is lack of trust. There's a line in our book that says something about grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Grasping and developing. Now, if we grasp and develop and do the things that these 12 steps tell us to do, we have, in effect, established a personally acceptable, conscious partnership with the infinite. In the entire business of living. And we find that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is far, far more progressive, infinitely more progressive than the disease of alcoholism. It's a fantastic thing. Four is worse than all three of them. Because it says we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now, if you think that's an ego builder, get a thick pad and a long pencil and start writing. This tickles me, too, because if there's ever an inventory taker, it was me. I inventoried everybody I ever knew and lots of people that were just walking by. But this is a little different. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And we write it. And the next one, we'll never be called upon to do anything worse than step five. Step five says, after we've written this inventory, we've got to share it. We admit it to God and to ourselves. Now, this is pretty simple. We can hide under the table and do that. And nobody knows but me and God, you know. It's still a secret. But they snuck another condition in there. We admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. The exact nature of our wrongs. Why is that in there? To surrender to death. If we have any ego left after five, we ain't done it. We ought to stay at it for a little while longer. Somebody, some flesh and blood guy is going to be walking around the streets knowing what's inside of me. So this is very, very vital and very necessary that we share this with another human being. And the next two, Mr. P. talked a little about them this morning. We have written this inventory, we have shared it. And now we become willing to give it away, and we give it away. Why do we miss this little deal? Why do we think we have to still keep pulling these old defects of character out of the fire like chestnuts and beating our brains out with them? If I could have done away with my defects of character, I wouldn't be a member of this leper colony. I'd have done it. My book don't tell me that I got to do it. It says I'm to write it down, share it, become willing to give it away. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character and give it away, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. We don't have to go over that time after time after time. We take it and go on our way. Now, we still got two steps in the first nine. We made a list of all persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. If you haven't done this, do it. Do it quick. You get through with these two, it's like an inside shower. You feel clean through and through. The immediate effect of 8 and 9 is greater, I think, than any other steps in the program. The weight of the world goes off you. And I want to tell you a little story about that, and I'm going to quit in a minute. I have to, because I've got to catch a plane. That's the only thing that saves you. I got a call some years back on a Friday night from a man in Whittier, and he said, "Chuck, I'm sitting here with a six-gun in my lap, and I'm going to blow my brains out." But he says, "Jim told me not to kill myself until I called you." And he says, "Now what do you got to say?" And I says, "You called me on a bad night." I says, "I'm yakking tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday night, but Monday night's open. Now, if you want to see me, come down here Monday night and we'll talk. And if we don't, go ahead and blow your brains out." 7:30 Monday, the doorbell rang. And at 2:30 the next morning, we were right where we are right now. We made a list of all persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And I was sitting there telling this guy, "Now you gotta go to your people and tell them that you're not the big shot that you would have had to believe. That you're an alcoholic, and that you've found a way to live that might let you live one day at a time without drinking. And amongst the things that you've got to do is make amends, and that's why you're here. Now, this guy was not only an alcoholic, he was a sort of a gambler-like. And he won a lot of, lost a lot of money that he didn't have. And it was mainly to professional gamblers. And I said to him, now you got to go to these men and say, look, I admit the debt, but I ain't got no money. I'll pay you when I can. Why, says sucker, can't do that. He says, they'll kill me. I says, so what? You won't have suicide on your mind. And the man started laughing, and he's still laughing. And he'd walked the street ever since that morning. A free man. He has no debts now. They're all paid off. And he's a free man. Don't sell these steps, 8 and 9, short. Now, that's 9 steps. And the first 9 steps of our program will surrender anybody that isn't surrendered when you get here. That's the reason for these first 9 steps, to squeeze us out of ourselves. To clear away the wreckage of the past. And then we can look deep within ourselves and find us, which includes our relationship to each other and to God. What a beautiful thing this is. It's an inside job. We still got 2 more steps. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood it. Praying only for knowledge if there's will for it, and try to get out. I've lived by this step for 27 years. Now this is the thing that I tried to explain to the girl. That says, I'm here to learn how to run my life. You see, I failed in every department of life. I gave it every bit of my wit and wisdom, every resource I had, and I failed. I not only failed as a drunk, I failed as a husband, a father, a businessman, a man, and a drunk. Every department of life, a total failure. And I'd given it everything I had, so there's nothing in me that even wants to believe that I can run my life. I know better. But again, thank God I don't have to. Because I got step 11. I get up in the morning and I say, look, Dad, I'm reporting for duty. I'm going to move it around. I'm going to do the best I can with what I got today. And all I want out of you is a little guidance and direction if I were to carry it out. Sure, thank you. And I go about my business. And I've lived that way for 27 years. In total expectancy of guidance and direction. And I get it. And you might say again, how do you know? All I got to do is look at my own books. Again, I never had it so good. This is the only good life I've ever known, the only easy life that's ever been mine in my entire life. And it's by the grace of God through the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now we've got one more thing. A program of action for the rest of our life. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And I'm one who believes that no man and no woman can honestly take these steps without having a spiritual awakening. If we do it as honestly as we know how, that's the result. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. And to practice these principles in all of our affairs, a lifetime job. Now I'm a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk. Of myself, I cannot stay sober. And I cannot live and drink. So, how come I've been able to live 9,800 and some odd days without having to take a drink or a pill. Because I have tried to do what the 12th step tells me to do. I have tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And to practice these principles in home, in play, in business, in AA, the works. And if I am practicing the same principles in everything I do, everything is one. And there are no twos or threes. We are put back together again. We are made whole. There is nothing more or less spiritual than another, and there is nothing more or less important than another. If I'm practicing these principles in all of my affairs, my business and my home and my play and my AA are all one. They're not two. And I think this is the thing that we have to come to. You see, the problem in life is conscious separation from each other and God. And the answer to life is conscious unity. In Him we live and move and have our being. The conscious awareness of the living presence of the Almighty. This is the only answer there is. For you and for me as alcoholics, and for the non-alcoholic world as well. There are not two answers, one for me and another one for my wife. It's all the same answer. But she finds it in her way and I find it in mine. Why? Because she has to find her own God and I have to find mine. And you have to find yours. And this is the meaning of as we understood Him in our book. As we understood Him has no reference to understanding the infinite. If it did have reference to that, I would have died 27 years ago. Because when I got here, it was a major chore to tie my own shoes. I had to give it everything I had to tie my own shoes. And if they had said to me, you've got to understand the infinite to get sober, I'd just gone ahead and died. It has reference only to the necessity of individual experience. And I'm going to quote a couple of Catholics and sit down. Now I can quote a couple of Catholics to you guys because I'm not Catholic. You can't say you came down here and poured Catholicism on us. Don't have to. AA would like to pour on you. I love AA. And I love its people. I even love the Al-Anani Nannies and the Hot Cha Chas. You know? They're all right. I want them to understand, though, that whole bunch this morning, you thought she was so good. If it hadn't been for us, you wouldn't have any Al-Anani. There was a guy, his name was Brother Lawrence. He wasn't even a priest. He was just a brother. He was a Carmelite brother. And the Carmelite's reason for being is to practice the presence of God. Now, this old boy lived in 1666. So he was a contemporary of mine. He thought that the practice of the presence of God was religion. But you and I know it's AA. They stole it from us. 200 or 300 years before we got it, but they stole it from us. And Brother Lawrence was a dishwasher. He was a pot and pan washer in the monastery, you know. He'd get back there washing these pots and pans, and everybody yelling for something. He didn't pay attention to him. He just washed his pots and pans and talked to his partner. Said he didn't know when his prayers of office started and stopped, and his prayers began. And that's the way I like it. So, he was talking to one of his troubled friends. And he said to him, if you would find God, look deeper than yourself, because it's the only place you're ever going to find Him. If you would find God, look deep within yourself, because the only place you're ever going to find it. Then there was another guy. He was a priest. He was Dominican. He lived in Germany about the same time, and he said this. He said, "You have heard that nature abhors a vacuum. I tell you that God abhors a vacuum and can't abide a vacuum any place under heaven, however small." Now, says he, all you have to do is to get empty of self, and automatically you're full of God. Such is the great significance of surrender. To get empty of self, and automatically you're full of God. Why? Because God has to be found where He is. And in my case, He's right here. And in your case, He's in the same place. We uncover and discover the thing we've been looking for all our lives. How fortunate can we be? I don't believe there's another segment of God's kids on the face of the earth that are as fortunate as we. Why? Because we had a terminal illness. And because our illness is progressive. And because the time comes when there is no way to survive without a living answer. And we come here looking for sobriety so that we might rub out a little bit of what we've already written on the blackboard of life. And a bunch of people like you, drunks who aren't drunk, say, "If you want what we have," and we look in their eyes, and we feel what they have, and we see it. "If you want what we have, here are the things we did. Now do them. Do these things to the best of your ability one day at a time. And see what happens." And I didn't have any more sense than to do it. And I've been doing it for 27 years. And the discoveries went like this. First, after 6 months, I discovered I was sober. Had been for 6 months. It was then I started talking, and I haven't shut up since. Not going to either. If you guys don't let me come back here again, I'll talk to my cattle. They listen. I talk to them now. The second discovery was something that happened in the household. Mr. C told you. We've had 47 years in Double Harmony. 27 years ago, it was going to the porch. The next discovery was that something had happened at the office. I was still down there cleaning up my desk. And business was good. And the next discovery was about me. My state of being was better than I'd ever known it. And then maybe 5 or 6, 7 years have gone by, and I discovered that I'm never alone anymore. I have a God of my very own. Wherever I am, He is. And I had, for 43 years, been consciously separated from Him and from you. And this is the great discovery. This is the great discovery. When we discover our very own God, the search is over and life begins. I am convinced that you and I are on the pathway of an infinite experience in this thing called life. An infinite father, an infinite child, and an infinite journey. I am convinced that it's never been normal or natural to walk alone as I walked alone for so many years. It's normal and natural for us to walk down the high road of life with our arms around each other, sharing our experience, strength, and hope one with another in love. This is normal. And it's not normal to be away from home. It's normal to become as little children, totally dependent on this great thing called God. fortunate can we be? That I, a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk, can have a life like this. I'm so grateful I can't see. Because, you see, I'd have settled for the meanest, oval, unhappy sobriety on the face of the earth. And I found sobriety, the ability to live comfortably, peacefully, and joyously with myself. But I also found you. And together, we found God. God bless you. Thank you very much.
For sharing your experiences, strength, and hope with us here today. And don't worry too much about talking to them cattle. We'd like to have you back. Just a couple short things to take care of here before we close with the Lord's Prayer. The tapes, again, I want to remind you, you can make arrangements for those over here at the corner of the room where the setup is. Again, I want to say thanks to another group of people, and that's a group of spouses of the people that were involved in many planning meetings throughout the past few months. We appreciate it. Now, one more little item to take care of. If you'll notice, on each table, we have some beautiful centerpieces. These were made by On, and some lucky people are going to take them home with them this afternoon. We've got a box somewhere under here. And I'm going to ask Pat to draw a number out of that. That one number that she draws will be good for the centerpiece on each table. If you'll turn around the tops of your chairs, each one of them has a number on it. And all the chairs with the number 14 get a centerpiece. I'd like to ask all of those members here in town that can to stay around for a little while and help us clean this place up. It won't take long if we all pitch in. Now, if you'll all stand, we'll close this meeting in the usual manner. And I want to remind you again, October 23rd next year, same time, same place. We're looking forward to having you all with us again. Thank you. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.